4-2 evening, ladies and gentlemen. Henrik here with Red Ice TV. Today we have Roosh V on the show. I'm sure you're aware of him. This is actually the first time he joins us on the show. I've followed some aspects of his work over the years, but interested in some aspects of it. And I wanted to bring him on today primarily to talk about the issue of censorship. He just had 9 of his books banned from Amazon. I'm very interested personally because it affects us here at Red Ice too, of course, a lot of other people out there. In terms of how internet censorship is going to develop here in the years to come, there is a lot of deplatforming, there is shadow banning, people are blocked. It is especially detrimental to independent people and alternative media and things like this. So these effects could have massive consequences if this behavior continues. It's a slippery slope, obviously, and once you enter into this process, where is it going to be enough? At what point are these people going to stop? I don't think they are going to stop. That we've already seen that they've set their sights to, what should we call it, lesser outlets in the wake of course, Alex Jones. And in terms of Roosh, same thing there, they've banned his books. Who's next? This is just how it goes. So, Roosh, thank you for coming on with us. Good to have you here today.
Thank you very much for having me on.
You bet. So before we talk about censorship, I know you wanted to also actually address a little bit. I wanted to ask you about your background a little bit, about some of the things you've been into really over the years as well. You have been in a lot of hot water over the years. There's been a lot of writings about you. I remember back in 2015, that's when I think things really the shit hit the fan, so to speak. You were in Canada. You were attacked. You'd been banned from England and a lot of these things. And I know that one of the interesting things with people that are kind of have a career online, if I can call it that way, is that the progression is happening in front of everybody, right? So you grow, you change, and you progress. And that's the same thing for me and our outlet. We've been through a lot of different things over the years, a lot of different topics and interest things that we're interested in and things like this. But how do you feel about that, looking back, I guess, to your career and the things you used to do and write about? Is there any of this that you regret or wish that you had done differently looking back?
So really, I can just start by saying how I got involved in this, how I became this person that is attacked by the establishment. It started when I just wanted to solve a problem of mine, and that was way back in 1999, 2000, 2001. I wasn't good with women. I kept getting stuffed into the friend zone, and this was a problem because my dad never gave me advice on how to connect with women, and my mom gave me bad advice, pre-sexual revolution advice, when you have to buy them gifts and do nice things for them and hold the door open. So I didn't have a good model for how can a man who is raised in 21st century post-sexual revolution USA, I was born in Washington, D.C., how can I connect with a woman? How can I have intimacy with them? So I solved this problem by discovering back then on Usenet, the PUA community, the pickup artist community. And I started to blog back at the blog that I had about some of the nights that I had going out, meeting them, trying to date them. And eventually, men started to follow me. They started to read me. They liked the way I framed this problem and the things I was doing to solve it. So I wrote my first book, Bang, in 2007. And to be honest, this was a book that I wouldn't say it's a moral book. It was really just helping men sleep with as many girls as they possibly can. There wasn't a balance to it. And then from there, it took 4 years after that where the Southern Poverty Law Center, they noticed me. In 2011, they put me on this misogynist hate list. And a lot of men who were put on that list, they got scared and they stopped writing or blogging. But I kept on going. And then when I did lectures in 2015, I did them in Germany, England, USA, and Canada. In Canada, I was met with this huge resistance from mayors and local social justice warriors and feminist groups. And so just because I wanted to solve this problem on how can I meet women, and as I've gotten older, I've become more balanced in that aspect, it has launched me in the center of some kind of cultural war where the globalists, or whatever you want to call them, they're trying to invert masculinity and femininity. They are trying to weaken men as much as they can. So because I'm trying to teach men how to be men, how to achieve what they want in life, it's kind of put me in a position where you asked me if I regret anything I did, but really it wasn't a plan. It just step by step, I find myself in a position where very powerful people don't want me to continue talking about the advice that I give to men.
Exactly. Now, let's talk about some of the more explicit things. I haven't read all your books. I haven't kept up with all the aspects of your work. We're going to talk about your latest book in a little bit here, too, Game. It's a new one that's out. And it seems, Roosh, that it's been, I guess, you've been more attracted to traditionalism as you've gone. You've appreciated, I guess, I don't know if this is the right term for it, but more conservative or traditional values as you've progressed and how you started out, it's not the person you are today. But was there ever, I mean, I've heard some accusations that like you were encouraging that women were raped and stuff like that. Is there any truth to that? Or is this just more spin by the fake news media?
It's all fake news. You don't write a 400-page book on how to connect with a woman if your plan all along was to rape them. So, I mean, you know, if you really wanted to abuse women, assault them, you don't need to put hundreds of hours into thought, you know, trying to understand yourself and understand them, how to talk to them, how to date them. You don't need to do those things. And I think the reason they came after me was because the advice I give is not the internet marketer quick, how to get laid quick, never get rejected by a hot girl. Like I try to give a foundation for men, how to be stronger men. So I think this is, I mean, the best guess, maybe you have a better guess on why they're coming after me, but the best guess I can come up with is that some men, by going into the red pill on understanding women and trying to be with them, they find out that all this egalitarian myth that men and women are completely equal, the stuff that the narrative, the neoliberal narrative pushes is not exactly true. So, you know, there's a lot of ways to red pill a man. And I think understanding the sexes is one of the most important ways, because if you know the Bible, the story of Adam and Eve, it's one of the first stories in the Bible where whoever wrote the Bible is trying to pass on this wisdom to men to understand women in the best way possible.
Do you think the lessons that you can give in terms of helping men to connect with women and helping ultimately relationships being formed? I know, again, I know that that's not how you started out. It was more about just, you know, sleeping with as many women as possible. What made you move away from that, actually? That's an interesting point before we talk more about that. Did you realize along the way that there's like, what's the use of this? What's the purpose? How come you appreciated more of like the family and marriage today than you were back then?
So I thought when I was in my early to mid 20s that true happiness was something along the lines of a model of being a rock star, something you would see on MTV, of being with a lot of girls, having a lot of fame. So, I mean, I'm not saying I was internationally famous, but I did develop a level of fame. And, you know, thanks to dedicating my life just to being with women, if you dedicate yourself to anything, you're going to reach a level of success with that. So I was able to, let's say, sleep with a lot of girls. And I did that, and the happiness, it wasn't there. In fact, it was the opposite. I'm sleeping with them, but I'm not connecting with them. I was really feeding my most beastly side, my most shallow animalistic side. So once this peaked, and I mean, I liken trying to sleep with a lot of girls to an addiction, just like any other, if you're addicted to drugs, alcohol. So, I mean, there just was nowhere to go. There's nothing past this physical act, lacking in love, lacking in intimacy. There's nothing else beyond that. And as soon as that act is done, that sexual act is done, you're still the same person. You're no better off. And in fact, you know, I think your soul can be damaged if you're physically involved with a lot of people without connecting with them. So then that's when I started to pursue the more relationship side. But the one issue is that even though I am telling men that, look, sleeping with a lot of girls is not going to give you what you want, it's not going to give you this, you know, happiness, the sex urge in men is very strong. They still want to try it. When you're raised in the West and you see all these famous men seemingly happy, and you see the type the men like Dan Balzerian showing on his Instagram all the hot babes that are on his boat, men still want to try that.
Yeah, of course. And I think the majority of studies that I've checked into in terms of women is that they seem to, they're affected more by sleeping around with a lot of men and stuff like that. They're, you know, mentally, there's a lot of problems that comes with that. But I think you're right. I think promiscuity overall is a very detrimental, you know, aspect in Western society. And of course, this is kind of lifted up today. It's all very degenerate and stuff like that. Now, before we dive into that and talk a little bit more about, you know, family and your book and game and all these things and the censorship issue as well. Talk to us a little bit about that. I remember seeing one of the, was it a Ukrainian TV show you were on?
Oh, yeah.
And it was like 2013 or something. And all these women were like saying you were just like making it up. What's the score with that?
What that was, okay. So what that was, I did a blog post saying 20 pictures of beautiful Ukrainian girls. I didn't say I dated them, and at the time when I published this, no one assumed that. I mean, these were really good-looking girls. This is photos you get from Facebook or something. I just wanted to show men what the girls were like because I was blown away by the beauty there. So what this show did is Roosh claims to have slept with all these girls, and then all these girls are like, I don't know him. Of course you don't, because I just pulled the photo. I never claimed that. So
right.
Anyway.
Okay.
So, but they, you know, all these talk shows, and this happened, and I got hit bad on Dr. Oz, too, a couple years after
that. I didn't even know you were on there either. So, okay, what
yeah,
happened there?
But, and so on the Dr. Oz show, they said they want me to show up to talk about fat shaming and the effects it is having. They wanted me to be on some kind of panel. So I showed up. It wasn't a panel. It was a trap. They totally ambushed me. It was only me, and they had all these clips of my face darkened to look like an evil person. And then they had something like a Chinese communist struggle session where four really large women were just yelling at me.
Jesus,
so they wanted me to apologize. I didn't. And so that was that.
Interesting. I'll try to find it on YouTube here as you were talking. There's just one version. Maybe it's been scrubbed or something. That would be funny to see. So because you've been cornered a lot of times and stuff. and of course, that's because, you know, as you say, there is a miss, and this happens to a lot of people that are in the alternative overall, you know, people like us too, for example, you know, Lana, they call my wife who works with us, she's a white supremacist and a neo-Nazi, and that's not true, you know, we don't like immigration, we're very pro-European and things like this, but it's always this intense, irrational spinning and over-the-top reaction to kind of the messages that we come with. So I know what it is like to be in that situation. And it's very frustrating, too, because it's like, just listen to what we actually are saying. And you just wish that some of these people were calm and rational enough to actually receive the message. But that doesn't seem to be the case, because they obviously have an agenda, too. They don't want us to get the word out about these things. You think it's similar then with the topics that you're kind of interested in terms of today, you know, with family and relationships and, and helping men to reach women?
The best explanation I can come up with is why they're going after people like us. Now, we don't have the same topic matter. You know, I mean, I don't remember tuning into a Red Ice interview on how to pick up girls.
But no, this is the first.
but the bottom line is we're pushing normalcy. I'm pushing men being strong and pursuing women. You are pushing maybe a more tribal organization of how the West should be. We're pushing natural things. So when the current narrative is an inversion, when up is down and, you know, down is up, and they're giving hormone blockers to young kids to change their sex, anyone who pushes normalcy will be attacked. And going and getting ambushed on a talk show, it doesn't actually hurt. But when they start taking away your platforms, and then they start taking away your means to make a living, that's when it starts to hurt there. But I knew it was getting really weird when I think last year there was a 4chan prank where they put up signs on campuses saying it's okay to be white, and then the college campuses flipped out, and they were saying it's, you know, hate speech. And I'm thinking, it's okay to be white. I mean, that's not, I don't see that as something like a white supremacist statement, but you can't even utter banal truths. And what they're doing by attacking people like you and me, and they're doing it in such a public way, is to discourage anyone else from thinking about setting up their own platforms too.
Absolutely. They have to get in, I think, really early in the stage and demonize these individuals as much as they can so that other people see, oh, shit, like, look at how they're treated. Look at the pressure on them. I think number of times Lana's had other, specifically when there's other women that come out. There was, like, the school teacher once that she interviewed, and it just became this national news story. You know, like, she had her on her show that just talked about it, and she had been more explicit in terms of being pro-European and not being anti-white and not hating on her own people and things like that. And this just turned into a shitstorm and went all over the place. And I agree with you there, because I realized this is what they're doing. They're trying to make an example out of this woman, this poor woman who just comes out, and she didn't explicitly say anything like that she's hating anything. She didn't even veil say that. She was just being honest. And so they're trying to make an example to make sure that other women see that you do not want to, do this. You don't want to cross this boundary, because you'll be vehemently attacked. So I think you're right that they have to make examples out of certain people, and they have to go after them to try to shut it down. At the same time, the dilemma that they're in right now is that there's also people also get attracted to the both individuals, but also the material that they are trying to put the kibosh on, that they're trying to quash, that they're trying to shut up. What's happened in your case with the books? Have there been an increased interest in the books, or are you going to be super financially hurt because Amazon took them down? What's going to happen there, and what's your strategy moving forward?
So what happened with my new book, it came out about a week and a half ago. And as you can see, I've changed a bit. So in my new book, there's a couple, a man and a woman sitting romantically under a tree. It's not the same as my first book when I just wanted to sleep with as many girls. So I figured this is one of the least sexually graphic books I've ever made, the most normal books that I have ever done in terms of I tell men the downsides of if you get your ego involved and try to sleep around. You know, I was as honest as I could. And I think this is a very healthy book. Of course, some people will say, Roosh, you encourage men to go to the clubs and pick up easy women and so on. There's always going to be those people, and I can understand that. But it was the least graphic book 3 days after, and it was in the top 1,000. And to get a self-published book in the top 1,000 of Amazon is very difficult, very, very difficult. It got there, and the Amazon just sent me an email saying, your book has been removed because it violated our content guidelines. But guess what? We're not going to tell you what content guidelines that you broke. If you want to make changes, then you can resubmit it. Make changes to a 142,000-word book, I have to guess. So they took that out. And then once that email came, and, you know, I was so excited that my book was doing well, I spent 2 years on it, hundreds of hours. And on the third day, Amazon, they want to make the decision for millions of people what books they can read or not. I'm thinking, what do I do? Thankfully, I have a web store, and I can sell the ebook and the audiobook directly to people who want to buy it. And so I just told people, hey, look, Amazon, they banned me, and if you still want the ebook, you can go here. I don't know when I can get the paperback back. And the response was overwhelming. I mean, people said, look, Roosh, I'm a married guy. I'm not into game, but what Amazon did was wrong, so I'm going to buy your book anyway. So in the short term, I'm fine. In the short term, I'm not going to be, you know, hurt, but you have to wait 6 months or 12 months and then ask me, what is it like to have a book removed from the biggest platform where authors can sell their books? I think in the long run, it's definitely going to hurt. But as long as I have my own store, I'm not going to starve, which is what they want.
Yeah, exactly. They're trying different ways. And of course, this is financially as a way to try to end your ability to continue with this work. We've experienced the same thing in terms of PayPal. They terminated our account overnight. We lost all our recurring subscriptions. And I thought we would go under for a while, you know. We did get a lot of help from people out there, which is fantastic. And, you know, this is something. But you're right. It's something we're still scared of in the long term because we don't know. You know, and the same thing will happen if we're banned from YouTube or from Facebook or Twitter, like Alex Jones was recently, right? He was removed from all these platforms. So my point at the start of the show was to mention this aspect that there's blood in the water now. They've successfully managed to, you know, you on Amazon, Alex on InfoWars, other people on Facebook. Obviously, we should mention people like Anglin and the Daily Stormer that were kicked off altogether. They couldn't even get a domain name. This is, as far as I know, hasn't happened to Alex or too many other people after that point. So there are a lot of individuals, but Roosh, this is not going to stop. This means, all right, we first move is successful. Let's go for the other ones now. I saw the other day it was the Daily Beast were lobbying for our YouTube channel to be removed. They claimed that they had even contacted YouTube and stuff like that. Where is this going to end? And what's what is the end game here? Do you think is it just to remove every, because the corridor is just going to get more narrow and narrow and narrow, and if you, as you said, need to adjust to this all the time by rewriting or self-censoring yourself or not saying certain things. This is truly like a 1984, you know, future that's waiting for us in the wings here.
What I believe they want is complete control over what everyone consumes and therefore thinks. Complete. You know, they start in public education. They control the universities, the media, the entertainment, Hollywood. They want to control every aspect of what you think about men, women, race, nation, everything. Now, it's okay if you share a million photos of cute dogs and cats. It's okay if you have like a meme channel where, you know, you get quotes from famous people. But the second you start hammering truth, they are going to get you, because what are you doing? You're disrupting their model where they need millions of slaves just to consume and do what they want. So we are basically, you know, they want us to get in line, to be a good slave. Many rulers in the past have tried this. They've tried to control every aspect of the citizens' lives because they're so scared. What I think is the harder they're going after us, especially me. I mean, my influence is not that large. I would love to think that I'm really famous and influential, but I'm not. So I think that the stronger they come after people like us, the more that's an indication that they're losing control internally, that they have access to data we don't, that's showing they're losing the plot. So really, we should be flattered, honored, that they're trying so hard to shut us down. But at the same time, we are human beings too. And it's not easy to go to bed when you just get an email that cuts off a significant part of your income. So, I mean, really, what I do look for is the harder someone has been attacked, if they're still in this game, that means they believe what they are talking about. They are not an actor. They're not just in it for the money. Because as you know, once you're attacked this hard, you're basically trying to run a business on super hard mode. It's very difficult when you don't have PayPal and all these other platforms to help you.
And also, Rich, think of it this way. I mentioned this to someone else a couple of shows back in terms of, like, take YouTube then as a platform, right, where the content creators there's a method built in into the platform where you can advertise, monetize your content so that you can be free to produce more content. And this is how you expand. This is how you can continue doing what you're doing, put more time in it and stuff like that. But obviously, this has been very one-sided. When the demonetization started, this was primarily from people that are more right-wing and conservative and stuff like that. Most liberals and leftists and progressives, they are free to still have their monetization, right? So the first step was to financially cripple those people that are fighting back against the liberal world order, like the progressives, the globalists and stuff like that. So they crippled them financially. And so people have to find alternative ways of doing it or keep doing it while they're doing other things. So I'm just saying it's an uneven and unfair playing field already to begin with. But even that was not enough. A couple of years after this, in the wake of demonetizing a lot of people that they just don't like, now they just fully even have to shut them down. It was not enough with just terminating them financially. And so it's this complete unbalanced picture of, I mean, it's clear what ideology is running the world. It's clear that liberalism, cultural Marxism, progressivism, call it what you want, is the dictating narrative of our times, and that they are doing everything they can to silence people that have an alternative view on these things or can effectively, I would say, can critique it, right?
And, I mean, it shows that the fact that they're working to shut down your YouTube, to shut down my book, it's really an indication of how fragile they actually are. So I think, Henrik, we are getting closer. We are getting closer to really unraveling them. It's just a matter of how far we can actually go. But the one thing that I want to say is that unless you have a deal with a major corporation, unless you have an entertainment deal with them, a content deal, if I don't care if you're us, if you're that famous YouTuber PewDiePie, they are going to get you, because you are not allowed to give red pills unless you have a corporate handler, unless they have someone showing you what you can and can't say. I don't mean to talk bad about anyone, but a very famous, somewhat conservative, I don't know if we would call him that, is Jordan Peterson. And Jordan Peterson, I found out, has a Hollywood agent. Now, how do we get that, Henrik? How do we get a Hollywood agent?
He has a foot in with the UN. I don't know if you saw, what was his name again? The guy who does the dark stream, Vox Day. He's done a number of them where he actually detailed that he was one of the writers to the Agenda 2020, is it, or 2030 or something like that. And he apparently, on the back end, he has all these inside deals. And his point was that they've actually launched him as this kind of superstar, being kind of against like the globalization or against kind of some of the current lefty trends right now. So I don't know if that all of it is true, but I wouldn't be surprised if they have some of these individuals that they launch to kind of be there as the, well, you know, controlled opposition, or they're there to basically snatch up, if you will, people who are willing to listen to critiques of the establishment. But these individuals will only get you so far, if you see what I'm saying.
Yeah, because I was starting to see him do these huge sold-out shows in these big auditoriums, thousands of people. I'm looking at that and I'm thinking, I can't even do a lecture of 40 people. They shut it down, or they try to. So if he can do thousands of people and no one is trying to stop it, that's when I started to dig into him. And I said, oh, he has connections that we don't. If you, Henrik, try to do a talk of, you know, hundreds of people and you say where the location is, I guarantee you they are going to cancel on you. Someone's going to call in a bomb threat. But this guy, somehow he has done a tour of dozens of places. I wish I can do a tour of just two places, but I can't. So, I mean, that's how you know if you are connected. But he has to make a deal with them. He has to agree not to speak about certain things. You know, he has to be a gatekeeper. And so if you agree to be a gatekeeper, they will let you have your lectures, your Amazon book, your top 10 Amazon book. They'll let you have YouTube, everything. But if you don't have a deal, if you didn't make connections with the cultural elite, then you get shut down one platform after another.
Yeah, it is interesting. And this, I found the story here that we reposted. And he was, of course, it's the UN high-level panel on sustainable development that they were actually part of writing. He was one of the 27 members. And then in an interview later on, he actually admitted that he was the one who actually came up with the underlying narrative for that. So, I mean, does it mean he's like this big bad man or whatever? I don't know, maybe. But the point is he has an in with that kind of level of organization, if you will, on the global level. So something's up there. But you know, in terms of Jordan Peterson, of course, there's others as well that are there and kind of, as you say, they're not getting that level of censorship. They're still free to roam around. There's a lot of those kinds of people. But I think ultimately you're right that it's not the signs of a strong and confident system that we're up against. It's a sign of a weak and scared system that doesn't know what to do anymore. It doesn't know how to argue. It doesn't know how to fight back in terms of on the playing field of ideas. Only thing they know how to do is silence and suppress using algorithms and, you know, the Google algorithms and everything to, like, demote people or only list the bad stuff first and things like that. So they're scared of something, that's for sure.
Yeah, and this is why using arguments and logic, it doesn't seem to work. Like, the more logic you use, the more likely they're just going to shut you down anyway. So the only way that a change can happen is if the normies, they wake up. If the bulk of the people who are consuming all this entertainment and don't care if you get shut down or if I get shut down, if they start to wake up, the only way I see this happening is if you take away their beloved Netflix comedies, their entertainment. We saw a little bit of that with Gamergate when they tried to put in SJW ideas into the video games that men play. So unfortunately, if those on the edge, such as us, are shut down, no one will really care, you know, because we are already on the edge anyway, and we don't have a mainstream audience. But people don't understand that those on the edge are shut down first. And then next thing you see is an acceleration. I mean, if you look at the kind of comedies that Netflix Hollywood is putting out, they're not funny. They are not funny. They have – so now what are the normies going to do? Because human beings, they like to laugh. But you're not making them laugh. So they see – so then, you know, if – a normie tells me, hey, there's no good comedies anymore. I said, yeah, because they were censoring and they're doing it now. They started with guys like me. Where were you when I got banned? You know, but see, so when I think once you take away their comfortable entertainment, their sports ball, you see what's happening with the NFL. Now the normies are like, what's going on? On Sunday, I used to watch this great sports ball game. I used to sit for 3.5 hours, and half of that is Coca-Cola commercials. But now I can't do it because of all of the politics that are in it. They can't watch their comedies.
They ruin everything. Yeah. They ruin everything.
So, well, good. I hope so. Exactly. I think we can hope that they ruin all their comedies, all their sports ball games. Maybe then the normies will wake up. But then I can ask you, did they breed these people, I don't want to use that word, but did they create a farm of these really dumb cows and pigs that even if you give them the truth, they are so now incapable of overthrowing the farmer who is in control of him, of them?
Yeah, it seems like it. I don't know what it's going to take to wake some of these people up. As you say, you can give them all the facts, all the reasoning, all the proof in the world, and most people are not interested in that. I think the only thing that's going to wake them out of their slumber is to get them out of the comfort zone. And that's why, you know, when you listen to, I remember hearing one of these guys, the editor of The Atlantic, the magazine, the paper, he was not afraid of a revolution in America. This was in the wake of Trump and all that kind of stuff, because he said, there's still enough bread and circuses, right? People are still in the comfort zone. And he said, as long as we can give people, the word he's used was cheap calories and like simple entertainment. We don't have anything to worry about. The establishment is going to be fine. But there is a change. Having said that, though, it feels like there's more and more people that are beginning to question. And with the, you know, with the ascendancy of the internet, we have managed to break through in a way which I think the globalists didn't anticipate. And that's why the only option that they have left now is to control and regulate. Look at the EU, the so-called meme law that they're putting in place, Article 13 and 11. So they're trying desperately, Rouge, to quash it in any way they can. Now, I want to continue to talk more about this and also actually go in a little bit more detail into your book, Game, and talk about some of the things you write about there. And I think we should just take a quick little break and then return and do that in part two here as we continue. I don't want to go too far in the first segment. But tell people how they can pick up a copy of Game. You have a lot of other books there, too. Would you people are new to your work, would you propose that they begin with your latest book, or do you propose that they go back a little bit in the archives, so to speak?
Yeah, sure. If people want to learn more about me and my work, they can just go to my website, rooshv.com, rooshv.com. And Game is really a reboot of all the previous game books. I started it from scratch completely. So if any guy wants to get the most out of the dating advice that I give, Game is the best book to actually start with.
Excellent. So, ladies and gentlemen, let's just take a short little break here. We're going to be back with Roosh in part two, so stay tuned, everyone. We'll be right back after this. You can watch our stuff at redice.tv and redicemembers.com. We are on YouTube. We're also on BitChute and a number of other platforms. Make sure you check out the links down in the description and bookmark these sites because we are under attack. So if and when possibly we are taken down and removed from social media, you can still find our stuff. And of course, don't forget to follow our Telegram group or join our Telegram group as well.